This recording is brought to you by Whitworth University. To hear additional programs, please visit www.whitworth.edu/podcast.
Well, thank you. Thank you all for being here. Good evening to you all. I know there's a lot of places you could be on a Thursday evening, so I appreciate your attendance. And let me thank Whitworth University Vice President Burnley and his staff for inviting me here and kind of making sure that I felt welcome, which I definitely do, so I appreciate that. Every time I come to Whitworth, I definitely feel a certain kind of hospitality here. I first came in 2011, as Dr. Burnley recently just explained. And I was here also last December, came to campus just a couple months ago. And on that day, there happened to be this demonstration going on around my Whitworth and our Whitworth. And I remember it was a very cold day. It was cold and icy. And it was so cold that I remember folks were trying to post the stakes for these signs into the grass there, and it was so cold that it was difficult to do so. So, but in addition to all that sort of freezing temperature, there's a lot of warmth in that moment. Students give testimonials, and I really felt honored to be there and to witness that activist spirit still alive and well here at Whitworth. Let me also begin by acknowledging Indigenous Native peoples of this land. Last month, I had the opportunity of hosting Angela Davis to our campus, the scholar and activist. She came to Pullman. And so in my role as an administrator, one of the things that I do is programming. And so we kind of brought her to campus, and I had the opportunity to kind of introduce her a couple times. And one time I introduced her, and she, right after I spoke, someone else spoke, and then she went up and talked. And she started talking about how in Australia and other places, there's a much stronger tradition where at any formal gathering, the people will take time to recognize Indigenous folks who, you know, Indigenous peoples, Native peoples, first peoples of that land. And so since I had just talked and I hadn't done it, and then she goes on and talk about how we should all do this, you know, as you can imagine, I felt a little embarrassed. I didn't think she meant to kind of call me out, even though I kind of feel that way. I can see how he might feel. No, it certainly isn't meant to call anybody out, no. Definitely. But I think she had a good point that, you know, having an active memory where we recognize the land at which we're on and recognize the peoples who have contributed to our nation's past, have both sacrificed and contributed, is important to kind of remembering or making sure that we have an appropriate understanding of our nation. And I think in many ways that's what Black History Month is about, right, is that process of creating these broader memories and also sort of recognizing the Spokane Native peoples and Kalispell and Coeur d'Alene and all the various other groups that occupied this land initially. I wanted to take a moment to recognize that. So for this evening's talk, my focus is going to be on the Black Student Union here in the state of Washington, particularly in the late 1960s. The BSU was initially organized in San Francisco State University and quickly spread to the University of Washington not long after that. We're going to do some slides. I'm going to show some images of some newspaper clippings from that time period. I also have a couple video clips, so we'll do some video. And then also be talking, of course. So hopefully we'll kind of mix it up and keep everybody stimulated. That's the goal. The Black Student Union, or BSU, was first founded in 1966, and it was first founded at San Francisco State University. It is a political, or it was a political organization primarily consisting of college students, which used militant rhetoric and direct action protests to push for needed reforms within higher education. These reforms included diversification of the student body, hiring more faculty and staff of color, the inclusion of marginalized groups within the curriculum, and other measures addressing bigotry both on campus and off campus. Given that the Black Student Union was an influential student wing of the Black Power movement, examining it, as in this student movement, provides a more nuanced or complicated version of Black Power. And just to kind of talk about Black Power for a moment, oftentimes we hear very little about the Black Power movement, and even Civil Rights Movement, which gets a little bit more attention, is still a very sort of simplistic or kind of one-dimensional vision, right? So we get King, we get Rosa Parks, and oftentimes not much more than that. And when we get to the Black Power movement, maybe we hear a little bit about the Panthers, but typically they're kind of portrayed like the image that you see there with the guns, right? Sort of very menacing, portrayed as sort of very violent prone, hostile, right? Even maybe irrational or kind of emotional. And so there's sort of this dominant image of the Black Power movement as this kind of tragic time of kind of urban rioting and just kind of things getting out of control and very destructive. And of course, what my research is trying to do is complicate that and really join a group of scholars that have been arguing that, in fact, the Black Power movement is much more complicated than this kind of simplistic analysis. That there was, among other things, a very strong community focus and investment in communities, right? And so part of that was an emphasis on sort of Black nationality or sort of institution building, a kind of emphasis on cultural pride, and an emphasis on sort of self-determination or kind of empowerment, right? So all those things, you know, are really kind of some of the fundamental pieces of the Black Power movement. And I think the image with the little girls, that's Muhammad Ali and Malcolm X there with Malcolm X's daughters. And of course, Malcolm X, you know, and Muhammad Ali were important figures at this time. And we typically don't see an image like this where you have, you know, a kind of family, more communal aspect. So I like this photograph for that purpose. Okay, so now what I want to do is read a kind of excerpt describing the Black Power movement, describing the Black Student Union. And this is an incident that happened at Washington State University in 1969. So I'm just going to kind of read a kind of excerpt of it, of a newspaper report, to kind of give a snapshot of the organization. And I'll forward the slide there. So on Monday, March 3rd, in front of a packed audience, the Black Student Union held a forum at WSU's Todd Auditorium, where they denounced university and local officials for the treatment of the BSU during the previous weekend. In Colfax, Washington, the students had protested the recent conviction of five BSU members by blocking the entrance of the county jail. This emotionally charged protest resulted in 42 arrests, which included 27 individuals from WSU, 9 individuals from Eastern, and 6 from Whitworth University. Monday's contentious forum lasted 2 hours and featured several speakers, especially Eddie Leon and Mark Williams of the BSU at WSU, and also Carl Miller and Larry Gossett from the BSU of the University of Washington. This event also featured a special seating arrangement as the first 4 rows in the center were reserved for BSU members and the white participants of the protest. Playing on the common meaning of the term blacklisted, Larry Gossett encapsulated the Black students' sentiments by declaring that WSU President Glenn Terrell, local prosecuting attorney Philip A. Ferris, the local sheriff, had all been put on the BSU's whitelist. Such was the spirit and tone of the Black Student Union during the late 1960s. Okay, so hearing that sort of snapshot, I'm going to ask all of you, is there anything that sort of stands out to you or something that maybe you found surprising or interesting about that little snippet of... I mean, we had a conversation earlier with about sort of some issues kind of thinking about today. And in some ways, I think as a historian, we tend to think about time in terms of sort of chunks or sort of eras. And so when you think about the 1960s and 70s to today, from a historian's point of view, it's sort of easy to sort of, well, not easy, but it makes sense to see that as actually sort of one era, and that we're very much still in this era or in this kind of period of time, which is kind of shaped by certain questions and thoughts that are the same, right? From kind of a regular old sort of point of view, it can seem like, wow, it's been 40 years. How come it's been 50 years? How come these things haven't changed? And I think there's a lot of validity to that as well. But when we think about sort of how history tends to go in sort of periods of time, right, maybe like a slavery time period or, you know, Industrial Revolution or whatever, right? We have these sort of series of years that tend to be kind of structured around certain kind of ideas. And I think thinking about the ways in which we're still struggling with some of the same questions about diversifying students, recruiting faculty and staff of color, I guess I'll put it this way. The history that I'm talking about is still very current, right? It's both history and current. Some of the other themes I think that stand out there in terms of challenging authority, right? University officials, local law enforcement, speaking in front of a packed audience, right? That they were actually... also garnered a lot of attention on campus, that students were interested. This was, you know, front page news in the student newspaper, as we can see. Definitely sort of captured the politics and the spirit of campus, at least the attention of campus. And definitely the kind of connections, all very certain important themes that, again, sort of helped to kind of give a sense of what the Black Student Union was like at this time. So the first Black Student Union actually started in California, San Francisco State, as I mentioned before. San Francisco State, of course, is part of the Bay Area, which had a lot of kind of organizing and activity. The Black Panther Party starts in the Bay Area. There's other organizations at Berkeley and at Marriott College that had students organizing. So there's this kind of activist spirit that definitely influenced what the students at San Francisco State did and created a Black Student Union. At San Francisco State, or SF State, Black students first organized in 1963 when they formed a Negro Student Association. In 66, they changed the name to Black Student Union after the arrival of Jimmy Garrett. And Jimmy Garrett is the individual on the right there, as it says. Jimmy Garrett was a former freedom rider. He was a member of the Black Panther Party. He was a SNCC organizer, a former SNCC organizer. And he was actually the head of the Los Angeles office of SNCC, the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, before coming to San Francisco. Right? So someone who was well established as an activist, experienced in the civil rights movement, really was sort of the basis of his activism on campus and kind of in the Black Power movement. Again, sort of part of the way in which these things are linked, right? Once at SF State, Garrett pushed the Negro Student Association to embrace a more Black Power-oriented worldview. For example, in an interview from 1969, he said, "We began to set up, well, we call it, internal education programs, where we would meet at my house or someone else's house, and we would talk about ourselves, seeking identity and stuff like that." A lot of folks didn't even know they were black. A lot of people just thought they were Americans, didn't feel themselves to be black people. We discussed that a great deal through these educational, end quote. Through these educational programs, including a trip to the South, right, where students went to Mississippi and Alabama and Georgia, again, sort of the traveling, this group was transformed to be much more politically oriented and changed the name to reflect that orientation, right? So in many ways, the students that were involved didn't change. It was the same students, but kind of took on a new mission. The Black Student Union at San Francisco State continued the discussions, and this led to a slate of organizing programs. One was a tutorial program that taught reading and writing in mostly black low-income San Francisco area, neighborhoods. Also on campus, they worked to establish a Black Studies program by creating courses in SF State Experimental College, right? And the Experimental College was a program that allowed students to create their own classes. And was got funding from the university to do this. Through the Experimental College, the BSU would develop numerous courses, including writing, covering history, literature, art, music, and politics, and effectively actually created the first Black Studies major on their own. After a couple years of this activity, as this major basically took shape, in many ways, on the cutting edge of this curricular transformation, they begin to lobby the administration to make it a more formal part of the curriculum, right? To make it actually something you could earn a degree in. Unfortunately, their efforts to gain approval and go through the various channels were frustrated. The school bureaucracy was relatively unresponsive to their requests and their efforts. Due to these mounting frustrations, the Black Student Union issued a list of demands on November 5th, 1968. At first, the first of which of the demands was the creation of Black Studies. The president declined to agree to the demands, and so a student strike at San Francisco State resulted from this. Beginning on November 6th, students went on strike, starting with the Black Student Union. Soon after, they were joined by the Third World Liberation Front, which was a coalition of other students of color who also supported the goals of the Black Student Union and also added a few demands relative to curriculum on other communities of color, right? So, you know, we want a Black Studies program, but we also like to have, you know, Chicano studies or Asian studies and so forth. So they joined the effort. Also, faculty members joined the picket lines as well, who were also unhappy about certain kinds of labor issues, pay, benefits, and so forth. So from November 68 to March of 69, San Francisco State was under this, you know, walkout protest. The campus was occupied by the police on a continual basis, with the daily police presence between 200 and 600. By the end of the strike, more than 700 people were arrested, many of them students. Over 80 students were injured by police in the process of their arrest, and hundreds more were beaten by police, punched, dragged, slapped, either not arrested or arrested. The protesters themselves also used violence, including setting fires and exploding bombs, and 32 policemen were injured. After this 5 months long of sit-ins, the walkout, the rallies, and so forth, there was a compromise in March 21st, 1969, when the administration agreed to establish a College of Ethnic Studies, still the only college, today still the only College of Ethnic Studies that exists. The black students demanded and got the creation of a Black Studies department, and the increased enrollment of Black students, as well as financial assistance for these students. So this BSU Third World Liberation Front event at San Francisco State really kind of sets a tone or has an impact where a lot of other schools saw what happened there and said, well, we don't want to have that. Or students saw what happened there and said, wow, you know, they can really struggle and get something. You know, let's make some demands or you know, let's organize as well. So what I want to do now is show a video clip to kind of go along with the history of San Francisco State that I just gave, just to kind of give a few visuals. Right, so this is a video that's going to talk about the student strike at San Francisco State, and particularly kind of what happened. So, okay, we'll stop there. So I'm going to kind of continue with my narrative here, but just a couple things from the film. I mean, definitely an interesting film. It's called Activist State, if you want to look it up to watch the rest of it. It's on YouTube, obviously. There's a link there, but anyways. Yeah, I mean, interesting that you have this moment, particularly where you have these a lot of various folks, different nationalities kind of coming together. In some ways, it speaks to also part of the nature of the Black Power Movement, where you really had this kind of international or intercommunal emphasis that was really key. And so you see that in San Francisco State. You see that at a lot of institutions where students of color and white allies, whether they be focusing on the anti-Vietnam War, or talking about racism, that you have these sort of coalition building and partnerships as a really strong kind of organizing component. So I think that's one important thing that oftentimes we don't hear so much about when we think about the Black student or the Black Power Movement. So we see, so this protest, the student strike happens, lasts for 5 months, and really becomes international, kind of international news. Around the same time, kind of going back to our story here, thinking about how it gets to the Northwest, not long after the students at San Francisco State formed a Black student union, the organization was adopted by lots of other schools all along the West Coast and even beyond there. Particularly, the BSU spread to the Northwest through a Western Regional Black Youth Conference held in Los Angeles during Thanksgiving weekend of 1967. African-American students from the University of Washington attended this conference along with activist youth from around the West Coast. They met students, their counterparts at FS State and other places, and really, by the time they left that conference, were determined to start their own Black Student Union. To back up a little bit, so in November of 67, they go to Los Angeles and go to this conference. Earlier that same year, so the spring of 67, Stokely Carmichael came to Seattle and spoke both at Garfield High School at the University of Washington. Anybody from Seattle here knows? Okay, so a couple folks. And so he came and he spoke in the springtime, April. And this was a pivotal moment where Stokely Carmichael was a well-known advocate of Black Power Movement, sort of very influential person and very strong advocate, very kind of passionate speaker. There was a whole kind of story of his actual visit, but the short version of it is that it really had a profound impact on a lot of students, particularly high school and college students who heard him speak and were inspired. So that was sort of, another example of how these things were traveling. We had, you know, nationally known speakers coming to the Northwest. And you see the picture of Stokely Carmichael there. That's on the University of Washington student newspaper there. So once this group, they go to the conference Thanksgiving, they come back and begin creating their first chapter in the state of Washington. In addition to there being a chapter in Seattle, there was also a Western Regional Alliance of Black Student Unions which was initially headed by Jimmy Gare, who we talked about earlier. This was a, basically the way the Black Student Union functioned was kind of as like a loose confederation, you might say, where each individual chapter was independent, so there wasn't like a central decision-making body, but it was very common for them to write letters on each other's behalf, right? So if there was a protest happening at Whitworth, you know, maybe students from WSU would write letters to say, we support, you know, what the students are doing, you need to let them out of jail, or you should listen to their demands or whatever. They would, you know, if also kind of traveling to participate in certain kinds of protests and other kind of events, and also kind of socializing. It wasn't just all politics. So that was also part of it, sort of building community, building relationships, and also sharing sort of resources, right? So there was this sort of Western alliance of Black student unions in addition to the individual schools. The first official action of the BSU at the University of Washington in Seattle was a rally held in December. Then, and then kind of after the Christmas holiday, the students began to emerge on campus with a kind of a investment from the African American Students Society, which was already an organization that existed on that campus. So I'll go to my next slide. So the kind of first sort of major statement that the group made in the student newspaper was this article, you know, titled "Black New Black Image Emerging." The individual that you see kind of in the middle there, that's, you know, Dan Keith. Can you read that name? Can you read his name under there? I guess. Anyways, kind of right in the middle, the guy who's by himself. Dan Keith was the first president of the Black Student Union. And he's quoted as saying, "We changed our name from African American Student Society because of a newfound awareness of the common goals and problems of the non-white community. These goals, again, included increasing the enrollment of students of color, pushing for Black studies, and other reforms." A couple things to note about this article. It talks about how the Black Student Union, of course, was trying to sort of build a power base or build a basis to kind of make some demands. It also, the article talks about how it wasn't just Black students who were in this organization, that sort of from its very inception, it included Native American students, Latino students, and was very sort of open to kind of advocating for all kind of third world peoples, as they would have said at that time. Where am I? So aside from the statements in the newspaper, the Black Student Union in Seattle also addressed the UW president with direct letters and correspondences, also began meeting and discussing their demands. They demanded that in addition to the enrollment and hiring, they also addressed the athletic department, the sorority and fraternity system, housing and employment. And they also wanted to push the university to be a positive force in the surrounding kind of community, right? If you know Seattle, there's the University of Washington. It's kind of right up against the Central District, right? It was this very historical minority community or of color community, low-income community in Seattle, right? And so I'm really trying to push the university to have a role and a positive role in addressing the lives of people who lived there, who may be, you know, less than a mile away, but the university was sort of a world away from their lives. In the spring, so the organization kind of gets started right after winter break in 68. Right around sort of March, April, there's a series of events that happen that kind of radicalizes the group or sort of pushes them towards more confrontational tactics. One was a student sit-in at Franklin High School. So another thing that the college students did was to mentor high school students to encourage them to also form Black student unions. So you had Black student unions at Franklin High School, Garfield High School, at Meany Middle School, and sort of throughout the city, you know, you had this kind of outreach, right? So interesting, very, very, in some ways surprising kind of amount of networking and collaboration happening sort of between college students at different schools as well as between college students and the community, you know, both people younger than them, high school students, and so forth. So in the March of 68, there is this sit-in. What happens is at Franklin High School, there's at least two events that kind of really catalyze the issue. One is that two black female students are basically given indefinite expulsions for wearing Afro hairdos. Apparently, the principal felt like that was inappropriate for school, unladylike, or unprofessional, and so they were sent home. There was also an incident where there was a fight between some black students and a white student. The black students were expelled. The white student wasn't punished at all. And I'm sure this was sort of the just most recent event of a series of things that were happening at Franklin. So the students, the black students, and probably other allies, definitely were, you know, if I guess like they had enough, they wanted to do something, so they had this sit-in of the president's office at Franklin. To make a long story a little bit shorter, so they have the event. It kind of ends peacefully after some community folks arrive on the scene and kind of negotiate a kind of compromise. And so as far as Black Student Union history goes, what's sort of interesting or what becomes a real big issue is that following this event, at the very next week, there's a series of arrests where the Seattle police go around and arrest all of the college students that were involved, as well as key high school students that were seen as leaders of this protest. And so these arrests all take place on April 4th. Now, as you know from your US history, April 4th is also the day when Martin Luther King was killed. Okay, so there's some conflicting records. It's not quite clear, did the Seattle police know that King was killed, and so they arrested these guys to sort of try to prevent rioting and stuff happening, or was it just kind of a coincidence? I've seen some conflicting reports on that. So what is definitely true is that both sort of being arrested for really trying to have a peaceful protest, and then finding out that Martin Luther King was killed were both sort of very jarring experiences. Like, you're in jail and you found out, wow, this person who advocated nonviolence has been killed, you know, one of our main voices. And then, to add sort of add more to the story, while they're in jail, the story goes, there's a group of black inmates whom, once they find out that King has been killed, decide that they want to go and beat up their white inmates. And so maybe to get some revenge. And so, you know, presumably they're talking about it, they're getting ready. They want to go, you know, whoop somebody up. And the college students, guess what happens next? So then the college students, who are the Black Student Union members, say, no, let's not get violent. You know, that wouldn't honor Dr. King. What we need to do is actually, why don't you black inmates and white inmates sit down together and talk about what's going on in this jail? You know, what are some issues that are concerning us? Do we need medical care? Do we need, you know, better sanitation? Is the jail too dirty? You know, you can't visit your family. Your family can't come visit you, right? Let's talk about the significance of Dr. King, and maybe talk about what are some things that we can identify as goals, how we can organize, how we can actually make something positive out of this experience. All right. So they actually are able to persuade the folks not to get violent and actually just kind of sit down and talk with each other. And so you might think that the prison authorities might be very, you know, wow, you know, how nice that you prevented this riot, that you were able to, you know, get the prisoners to, or the inmates to it's in a jail. So the jail folks, well, actually what ends up happening is that once the local authorities hear about these conversations happening in the jail, their reaction is, oh, no, no, no. Let's get these college students out of jail now. This is going to be real bad. And so what ends up happening is that their arraignment is kind of expedited, and they're released from jail the very next day. Again, sort of emphasizing this kind of question about, is this America? I mean, I think for the college students, for the Black Student Union members, again, it was sort of part of this kind of radicalizing experience to say, what is this, a hypocrisy, or what are our leaders really valuing? Sort of what are their priorities, and do we agree with them, right? So that happens, and then, in addition to that, soon after, the students again go back to California for another Black Youth Conference, this time in San Francisco. So this is in early April, right? So King's killed on the 4th. A couple days later, on the 6th, they're back in California. They've gotten out of jail. And they're able to leave the state. So they get on a Greyhound bus, and they go back down to San Francisco. And in this environment, there was also a very charged atmosphere because a group of, the police had recently attacked a Black Panther office in Oakland. And so one Black Panther member was killed, another one was shot. Bobby Hutton was the one that was killed. Eldridge Cleaver was wounded. And so there was this sort of major, this was the first time a Black Panther member had been killed. And it was sort of a very sobering, very intensely emotional charged, both of mourning and of defiance, and it really kind of affected this whole conference gathering where students were there, and they went to the funeral, and the chairman of the Black Panthers, Bobby Seale, was the keynote speaker at the conference, and so he sort of was able to bring these issues to the forefront. Interestingly enough, the very first Black Panther Party chapter outside of California is created in Seattle as a direct kind of outgrowth of this event. So there's this sort of interesting Oakland to Seattle connection that happens there. But for the college students, back to the BSU, again, it was sort of part of this kind of series of experiences that all kind of happened right around late March, early April, which really just kind of emphasized the point of this was important. If sacrifices needed to be made, we're willing to make them to really push for the change that we think is necessary. Okay, so we get to April. Excuse me, we get to May, and the Black students are kind of seeing the school year come to an end soon. By the end of May, the semester is pretty much wrapped up, and so they're thinking, we can't let this school year end without having something. So they, again, restate demands to the older guard, who was the president of the University of Washington. There's various discussions. These discussions lead to more discussions, but not much concrete is being accomplished. I'm not sure what's going on in this picture. It's some kind of unrelated body art going on here. The picture that the guy with the, he's being painted on by an artist, so unrelated to Black Student Union stuff, but you see there's the story there on the side, on the other side of the page. So kind of really throughout kind of early May and into May, there's a series of meetings, discussions, but universities, institutions can be rather slow to actually implement changes. And so the Black students were saying, discussions aren't enough. We want to see some real concrete changes. And that wasn't happening. After various sort of meetings, demands, further demands, What they ended up deciding to do is have a sit-in of the president's office, right? The previous Thursday, after various demands, they, you know, sent a letter to the president saying, we want $50,000 to implement our recruitment efforts and so forth. If that doesn't happen, we're going to take direct action. They didn't get the money, so that very next Monday, which is May 20th, they staged a sit-in of their own. On that Monday, let's see, the BSU and their allies burst into the president's office. The sit-in lasted approximately 3 hours, and the administration, as the students kind of argued and negotiated with the administration, certain faculty members actually joined the BSU or at least provided some support in helping them negotiate it, as well as a local ACLU lawyer was also helpful. By about 9 o'clock, Odegaard, who's the president, kind of signs this agreement, which kind of recommits the university to the BSU's demands, and the sit-in comes to an end. And what is interesting happens, like, in the aftermath of this sit-in that happens in May, you see a variety of really remarkable reforms that are instituted at the University of Washington. One thing that happens is in the summer following, Black student union members are hired as recruiters and work in both kind of color neighborhoods in Seattle, as well as they went to Native reservations, they went to the Yakima Valley to recruit both Black students and other students of color. And so by the next fall, the Chicano enrollment went from an estimated 25 to 100. The Native student enrollment went from an estimated 10 to 90. And the Black student enrollment went from 150 to about 465, right? So about a 300% increase in the percentage of Black students on campus. There was also significant increases to the faculty and staff. Staff of color increased by about 50%, and the faculty rose from 7 to 15 by 1969. The Black Studies program also began soon after that, as well as other retention programs, which are now kind of housed under the Office of Minority Affairs and Diversity. Right. So if you know University of Washington, you know that organization is still in existence today. It's traced back to this sit-in and this kind of Black Student Union action in 68. Okay. I'm going to show another video clip now, which will kind of give some visuals to go along with this story. All right. So, yeah, so that was... you see various members of the Black Student Union who are now kind of professionals in various fields talking about their experience during that time period. So that's sort of the University of Washington. And like I said, students at the University of Washington and others really begin to network around the state of Washington and even down into Oregon. And connecting to colleagues, you know, their counterparts in California, right, that, you know, this organization, the Black Student Union, was being taken up all over the place. I can't say for sure that there was one at Woodworth University at this time, but, I'm 90% sure that there was, just because of the way in which you saw those examples where students were involved in what was going on at other schools and the way in which students were typically connecting at this time. Branching off the students and the activism happening at the University of Washington, the Washington State University also, there's a Black Student Union formed there also in the spring of 68. There's a series of events that happened at the at Washington State University, WSU. One incident happens where a group of high school students come to campus and are basically treated racistly or treated unfairly, end up leaving the campus. This causes sort of a series of kind of discussions and other kind of reforms that happen. One of the things that comes out of this is that the president who's creates a social responsibility committee that works with Black Student Union to recruit more students of color, particularly Black students, to campus. Janetta Cole, who you see in the picture there, was a faculty member, also the advisor for the Black Student Union at this time. Then we get to the next school year. Black Student Union continues to be very active. This is actually an article where they were challenging the student newspaper and how it was kind of representing them. So definitely willing to kind of take on various issues. But the main issue for them that year was, again, Black Studies. You know, here we have an example where E.J. Brisker, who was at that time the president of the Black Student Union at the University of Washington, comes over to WSU and speaks on the need for Black Studies. Again, those kind of networks happening. And so really the Black Studies continues to be a sort of a major issue that happens. And due to a variety of efforts happening, it's eventually created by the end of the school year, right? So just kind of as I sort of bring this to a close and we'll have some time for questions, I just think definitely, if nothing else, right, sort of challenging the way the Black Power movement is typically framed as this kind of destructive or maybe even forgettable or regrettable era in our nation's history, I think unearthing or recovering these stories where you have these valuable reforms, some of which we're still benefiting from today, some of which are still very relevant today, these kind of demands, these questions, these insights, really helps kind of give us a much more complicated, which I would say much more useful version of that time period. And I think also this history, which kind of talks about what was happening in the Northwest, also kind of helps we Northwesterners, Washingtonians, also feel connected to this past, which I think is also very important. So with that there, I will stop and leave some time for questions.